adjust your radio frequency. This is not a test. This is the Artist First Network.
Cool. Across every time zone covering both hemispheres, it's time for a featured music special on Artist First World Radio. I got the Saturday slot at Z-Man. Been doing this now for a little over 10 years, and I want to thank each and every listener that tuned us in last month. 3.25 million, folks. That's with a Mia, million. 3.25 million listeners last month. We are truly humbled. And I think one of the reasons you guys tune our station in is not to hear the same crap you hear on your local Clear Channel station involved with all the payola and all the big crappy record labels. You get to hear fresh new people that deserve to be heard, like our guest this hour. He's got a new double CD out. He's a musician extraordinaire. It is my honor to welcome to the Artist First Radio Network, Gary Ault. Hey, Gary.
Hi, how you doing?
Welcome to the broadcast, man. Where are we reaching you today?
New Jersey, northern New Jersey.
Northern New Jersey. You've got a great album here. You're quite a prolific songwriter. And as we traditionally do on this broadcast, Gary, we want to talk about you as a person. We want to introduce you as a human being to our listeners. So you're originally from Brooklyn?
I was born in Brooklyn. Actually moved to Long Island when I was about three, I suppose. So that's pretty much where I spent my growing years in Long Island.
And you knew that you were going to be, you knew music was something you wanted to do at a very early age.
Right. I think, I mean, as far back as I can remember, I loved music more than anything else. I remember listening to the AM radio back in the, early mid-60s, and, it just kind of took off from there. I knew that was always going to be my first love.
Yes, as I was reading your bio, I thought it was interesting that that a single record that you heard by Eric Clapton changed your outlook on maybe where you were going to take your music career.
Right.
Now, is Peggy your older sister?
Yes.
And she, well, you tell the story, please.
Well, I guess I was probably around 10 or 11 years old, and I was a drummer in the school band, you know, playing the snare drum and the triangle and things like that. And I think my musical horizons were fairly narrow at that point. And she decided to buy me an album that had Ginger Baker on it because she heard that was the drummer to listen to if you wanted to be a drummer. So she got me Best of Cream, which, of course, included Crossroads and Spoonful and, you know, a whole lot of other classics. And, I did enjoy Ginger Baker's drumming, and he did become my favorite drummer for quite a period of time. But Eric Clapton, it completely blew my mind, to use an old expression, especially Spoonful. I mean, the guitar solo on that is just, to this day, it just staggers my imagination when I listen to it. So I knew that I had to learn a few new things from that point on, and from there I got into the blues and just really expanded my musical horizons quite a bit.
What do you think it is? Maybe from a scientific analysis, you know, why does a song have a profound effect on, you know, certain songs will have profound effects on certain people? What do you think's going on there?
I'm not really sure. I guess it's a lot of different factors having to do with your upbringing and things like that. I mean, I was listening to pop radio the same as anyone else because that's what, came at me, and I didn't really know anything else. But I think when I heard Clapton, it hit a raw nerve. I mean, I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. Just the vibrato alone that he got, I guess I was emotionally connected with it right away, and I don't know if I can really explain that, you know, how that works, but that's what it did to me.
Driving into the station today, I heard a tune by Natalie Cole called Miss You Like Crazy, and man, it just, you know, certain songs, they just hit you right between the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And the other 10 songs I'm listening to on the way, they're nice, but they're not move you nice
right.
type material. Well, I guess, and as all art is, in my opinion, it's all individualized. You can't be told you like a piece of music, or even though Clear Channel and the monopolistic radio industry has been trying to do that for decades, you can't be told you like something. You have to actually enjoy it.
Right, right. And it's hard to say, you know, like you said, it is a very individual experience. I like some very complex music that stimulates me intellectually, and at the same time I like some very, very simple things, and I can't explain to you why a certain John Fogerty song hits me right in the gut, whereas something by someone else just doesn't do it for me. I don't even know what the reason for that is, but it's very true.
Well, the CD we're going to be playing material off of very shortly is called Tribute, and it has... well, first of all, folks, you should be surfing over. You can, if you're too lazy to surf over, we'll describe it to you. But, Gary, give out the web address. It's also linked on our homepage. But if people are out there surfing, how can they find you?
My web address is garyalt.com. That's just my name, GARYALT.com.
And to describe it, this is a famous, is this from the Sistine Chapel? This is a famous painting of God pointing his finger out. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it before. It's been around for, you know, I don't know, 500 years.
Right.
And then it's got a picture of you as a stick figure, and you're, you know, joining God's finger with your extended stick figure arm.
Right.
Obviously, there's some meaning there. What's going on but there?
Yeah, I believe that's called the creation, although I'm not even sure. But the idea behind it is just, what I'm just trying to say is that these individuals that have influenced me, the Claptons, the Beatles, and all these other fantastic artists, I'm basically a composite of everything I've listened to. I never tried to be Eric Clapton or Paul McCartney or anybody specific. I just listen to what I listen to, and I try to emulate it, and I assimilate it, and what comes out is a composite of all those different influences. But I think of myself as kind of a stick figure in comparison to the people that I'm essentially trying to emulate, because I don't think I'll ever get, you know, I don't think anybody will get close to what Eric Clapton has done. And, you know, so that's just my way of saying that yeah, this is a tribute, but don't think I'm trying to, you know, be these people.
Well, that's cool. And that's cool that, you know, I don't see that, just a little social comment, I don't see the next generation. I don't see the next Eric Clapton. Where's the next generation Eric Clapton? Where's the next generation Aerosmith? Where are the bands that'll be around today 30 years from now? Okay.
It's a good question, because what I see in the music business, well, I have kids that are like from 21 to 25, and they listen to some very interesting music, actually, that I think has good potential for being around 10 or 20 years. But for most of what I hear on the radio just doesn't really have the staying power, because it's just, you know, it's just like a quick fix kind of a thing. Very little instrumentally going on. And I don't mean to sound like an old timer saying, you know, talking about the good old days, but you know, back in the 60s and 70s, there was some really great songwriting going on, and some good musicianship. And there is today, but I think it's just a little harder to find. And I think radio stations like Artists First are helping, because, you know, you're not really featuring what the record companies are kind of trying to shove down our throats. So I think it's there. It's just a little harder to find.
Well, folks, let's get into the first cut. Our guest is Gary Ault. The album is Tribute. It's a big double CD. You're a prolific songwriter. We'll get into all the things that you write about and what motivates you after this first cut. Now, I'll let you introduce the first cut.
Okay, this is called L'une Brisée, and this is essentially a tribute to Jeff Beck.
Thank you.
listening to the music of Gary Ault. Our guest, his website is his name, Gary, GaryAlt.com, and it is linked up on our homepage. It is .com, isn't it, Gary?
Yes.
Gary. Gary, yeah. Maybe I should get a job in radio. Most people never write a song in their entire lives, and you've written bunches, although this is, in the scheme of things, this is a rather recent phenomenon as your music career goes. What do you think happened? Why'd you all of a sudden become a songwriter?
What basically happened was, I sort of had dabbled on and off in music, performing and, writing once in a while, but never serious. I was busy raising a family, working and doing all kinds of things. And at one point, I guess around 93 or something like that, my wife bought me an acoustic guitar as an anniversary gift. And I thought, well, you know what? This is a pretty awesome gift. I've got to do something with this, And my kids were pretty young, and we just started, coming up with songs. It just sort of happened, naturally, and I made a concerted effort to concentrate on that. And I think I realized that, I'm pretty good at it. I think I've got some things to learn, and, I honed my craft, and eventually I just realized how much I love writing and recording. And the other part of it is the fact that I never really thought I could write lyrics, although I never really tried. I just made an assumption many years ago that I probably could never do that. And I don't know, from listening to the great lyricists, I guess I just figured out I can do this. And, again, I've learned a lot along the way, but that's become my main love is writing and recording.
Yeah, growing up, I remember the tune, You Can Ring My Bell.
Don't remember that one.
The lyrics were, You Can Ring My Bell, You Can Ring My Bell. And I knew at that point I could never write a lyrical masterpiece like You Can Ring My Bell. But you know what, and not to be sarcastic, because the best songs, I mean, you guys all know them too. I mean, there's tunes that are on a different level because the musician took the time to write lyrics that had some meaning, not just some gibberish like Sue Studio, for instance, from Phil Collins. He made that up in an article. He said, hey, it's just a word that fit the rhythm, and so people probably tried to find deeper meaning in that, but sometimes it's just a little pop song. But do you feel that you're somebody that has something to say? Do you have strong opinions? Are you a closet Sean Hannity?
I don't, voice political opinions, but, some of my songs, probably have some meaning, like later on, maybe we'll get to play Color Chain. That's one I feel strongly about. But it just depends. Every song is different. Sometimes, probably most of the time, it's just the sound of the words, which is kind of from the John Lennon school of songwriting, where it's just the sound that the words make just sort of are married to whatever rhythm, whatever melody you created around that, and from there, if that's the way I begin writing a song, I'll think, well, what in the world is this about? I mean, I don't know what these words even mean. So what can this possibly be about? And sometimes I'll create a whole story, even with characters, with names, and of course half of that stuff will never show up in the song, but it's just like a story I come up with. Songs like that probably don't have meaning in terms of, anything of a social nature or of a relationship or anything like that. But then there are others that do, and you just have to figure out which are which, I guess.
Well, and like the premise of missing someone, okay? Someone's pet just died, their loved one's overseas, their girlfriend left them. Again, it's an individual thing that people take away.
Right.
We're going to move into another cut from our guest, Gary Ault. It's the very first song on the CD, this double CD. That's an important cut, the very first track that people generally will listen to. And it's entitled Falling, and you co-wrote this with Mr. Flood. Tell us about this.
Right, and this is one of those songs that does have meaning for me, which, hopefully will be evident as you listen to it. But basically, I had written the music to it, and then I wrote, most of the lyrics, but I just was stuck. I really only needed maybe another verse or a couple of lines or something like that. And I just thought, my friend Gary Flood lives up in upstate New York. He's always had a good facility with words. I've heard some of his songwriting and poetry, and I thought I'd run it by him. And in no time at all, he sent me an email back with a line or two. And what really struck me about it was that he got the meaning of the song like down instantaneously. I mean, you know how songs can be, or poems, you can read it and get something completely different out of it than what the writer had in mind, and the person sitting next to you can have their own interpretation. With this, he just nailed it, and the line, and it's a very, very personal song to me, and yet he just completely, you know, was tied in with what I was trying to express, and it flowed rhythmically and everything, you know. So he probably wrote about a verse worth or something like that, but it got me to the end of it, and that, you know, that's the story. It's it was just a real pleasure writing it that way.
It's not that I expected you to be around to catch me if I'm falling. It's just I thought you'd realize I'd always be there when you needed me. Now I need a place to hide, some warmth to dig a hole that I can crawl in, crawl in, crawl in. I'm falling, 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 yeah, I'm falling down.
I'm falling, I'm falling.
track is called Falling by Gary Ault, our guest on today's featured music special, Z-Man Studio 1A. Glad you guys are along with us. Remember, if you like us, tell your friends. If you hate us, tell your enemies, but get the word out there. We love all you guys that tune us in, and thank you guys for supporting the many fine artists that you hear on this station. And right now, Gary, just in case somebody can't stay for the rest of the show, where can they buy your CD?
Well, they can go to my website, but you can't buy it directly. You would be directed to cdbaby.com. And my CD is actually cdbaby.com/CD/GaryAult. That's my name, G-A-R-Y-A-L-T.
Or just get there, type it in the search, and you will find it. We highly recommend CD Baby, a great organization. We've had Derek Sivers on the broadcast, founder of the network, and bravo. They do a great job. They're a tremendous benefit to artists all over the world.
That's right.
We're going to talk about a song that has meaning to you, and I want to describe, before we go into that, I would like to describe the back cover of your CD. It shows a bathroom. It seems to be perhaps a period bathroom, and it has, over one sink, it has the word colored, and over the other sink, it has the word colorless, which I think is clever. Now, let's talk about the song Color Chain.
Okay. Well, it's, I grew up in the same world as everyone else, where there was a fair amount of prejudice around, and I grew up in a certain neighborhood that was all one color, pretty much. But at the same time, the artists that I was drawn to were, a lot of it was Motown, The Temptations, Smokey Robinson, Diana Ross, and I didn't see what the difference was between them and me, except that they were great entertainers, and I couldn't really see why I'd want to class them as a certain kind of person and judge them, based on that. And without sounding too preachy, I just never really got that. And I think as I grew older, I, realized more and more what prejudice can do to people. And it it's very disturbing to me. And what I see nowadays I think people are under the impression that we've got a great handle on it, but I think that there's probably a lot of simmering tensions below. And what this song is talking about is not the race riots of the 60s and things like that. It's just talking about the very subtle ways that people are still discriminated against. For example, when you want to buy a house in a decent neighborhood, but you're not the right color. And who perpetuates that? It's not just the realtors. It's the people that don't want you moving next door. It's okay if I work with you, I'll have lunch with you, and, I'll share a bus seat with you, but I really would prefer that you didn't move in next door to me. And things like that, if people could just educate not just their minds but their hearts, a lot of pain can sort of disappear, I don't think it's going to happen, necessarily, certainly not by them listening to my song, but that's just what I wanted to express. And it's basically a very much in the Jimi Hendrix style. And, of course, Jimi Hendrix was a very, very big influence on me, and he was a black musician that was playing probably more to white audiences than anyone else, but it didn't mean anything to him. He just played what he wanted to play. A lot of it was blues, a lot of it was funk, whatever it was, and I loved it, and that's part of what made me what I am today. So I just wanted to express something about, what's in my heart and what could be in other people's hearts.
Well, and I'm glad that we're discussing this topic. This gives me a chance to interject the following. We are taping this show live. It's airing live and being taped on September 12th, 2009. And we're coming to you from northeastern Ohio and in the city of Louisville, a city of probably 30,000 individuals. There are certain nightclubs. We have an interracial band. We have three white people and two black people in our band. Oh, my God. And there are places that we cannot play because we are absolutely forbidden to play there because the sole reason that our lead singer and our bass player are black. In today's, and I'm calling them out by name, I don't want to get sued, but there's an animal club, you guys can figure it out, and there's by today's standards in 2009 in northeastern Ohio, to be discriminated and not allowed to play clubs because of the only reason is that two of your members are black is just ridiculous.
Amazing.
Sorry, my blood pressure's going up when I talk about that. Well, let's get into it, folks. Here is the tune. It's called Color Chain. It's an extended set, so put your feet up and listen to this cut. ¶¶ been listening to Color Chain, a cut off the tribute CD from our guest, Gary Ault. Gary, let me give you a tip. DJs like long songs.
Oh, okay.
Well, for obvious reasons, folks. Figure it out. But, boy, we need to tell the listeners, and we haven't said this so far, that you are basically almost on this entire album, you play everything. That is amazing. That's amazing. You must have some very... I've met a few people like you that can sit down and do it all. You know, I realize guitar is your primary instrument, but you also play piano, you also play drums, you also play bass, you sing. What else do you do?
Well, that's about it. I mean, I play a little flute, and, you know, just basically whatever I need to, I figure out a way of playing it, although I tried violin recently, and that would take years to learn. But, yeah, I just do whatever I need to do. But I should say that on one track, I don't know if we'll get to it later, but a friend of mine named Charlie Lean played the drums on it because I just thought that I knew what he could do with it, and he did it. And I don't do most of the singing. On Color Chain I did, but on that second song, Falling Down, that was actually my friend Jason Arvanitis singing. And he sings on quite a lot of the songs. So, you know, I'm not real confident with my vocal ability, so I get someone to do whatever seems appropriate there.
And you actually do these instruments? I mean, you sit down and play a drum set? You don't just program a drum machine like the rest of us do?
It varies. On this particular, you know, 2-CD set, it's probably mostly me playing live drums.
Wow.
On a handful that are more like poppy kind of songs that we haven't gotten to, but I'll use like a keyboard, a Roland keyboard, not a programmable keyboard, but just, you know, where you're actually playing the drums with the keys.
Oh, no kidding.
And then there are probably a couple where I actually used drum loops, you know, like wave files where you just sort of edit it and, come up with a final product. So it just depends upon what seems appropriate for the song, I guess.
Well, and let's talk about that. You're a prime example of someone who heretofore, in decades past, as you and I well know, we were locked out. We had no hope whatsoever of getting a song on the radio. We institutionalized corruption in the radio and record business, still rampant. But now the playing field has leveled somewhat. What are your thoughts?
I'm not sure what to make of it yet. But yeah, I mean, you know, what we're doing today is a good example of this. I couldn't have hoped for this, you know, 10 years ago or something. People like CD Baby, they make it easy to put your CD up there, and then they you know, give you digital distribution. There's certainly a revolution going on in the way music is sold, and I think primarily because of the fact that it can be downloaded on a per-song basis, and so the buying public, being mostly young people, are not inclined to buy CDs or, you know, anything like that anymore. I guess they still do, but for the most part, they're using iTunes and Rhapsody and things like that. And unfortunately, I think that the effect of that is that artists are kind of obligated to, almost required to, almost make everything like a hit of hit quality, you know, because it used to be you'd buy, like the White Album, you know, you'd buy it because you heard Back in the USSR or something, and then you'd hear all these, you know, Helter Skelter and Sexy Sadie and all these great tracks that they're never going to be on the radio, you know.
Right.
So... Would that album have even sold if it came out in 2009? I think probably not. So the independent, there's different theories about what are happening to the major labels. I don't know if they're going away or not, but the indie labels and the stations like Artists First, I think, are having a lot of success because there's a market for it, and it's helped me out tremendously for sure, you know, because I don't have to go and sit in front of somebody with a suit and, you know, beg for a contract, that type of thing.
And why should you? If you can sell, we've had retired record executives from almost all the major record labels. Artie Kornfeld has a show on our station every Tuesday night. I get to personally produce him. And he'll tell you, if you can sell 50,000 albums out of your trunk, you'll have more money at the end of the day than if your record went platinum with any of the major labels. Plus, you'll own your own stuff, and you won't have to be in court suing the people that are ripping you off. Oh, that's right, the record labels.
And you don't have to listen to their artistic direction, and, you know, they're not going to dictate to you what you need to put on your next record, that type of thing.
Well, and the way I see it is that it was the MP3 file killed the current monopolistic radio and record business. Radio is in trouble, folks. Big time trouble. AM and FM radio stations are in big time trouble. Oh, they're not telling you that, are you? But I am. We happen to know that the certain people at some of these stations, one of those stations, the networks that owns over 1,000 stations, is thinking about no longer broadcasting over the air, but only broadcasting using the internet and Wi-Fi. For, let's see, they would cut their cost by, I don't know, 95%? That's where it's all going. And so, anyway, the MP3 file means people don't have to listen to crap. They only listen to what they want to now. They don't have to tune in your Clear Channel station and listen to 22 minutes of commercials an hour crammed in with the same five songs played till the top of the next hour. And it's killing the radio and record business, and who cares? Why should you listen to a bunch of commercials when you can load up your MP3 player and listen to your favorite tunes all day long? So what will radio turn into? Well, you'll still need one for the local car dealership and the local news, and it'll be a way to introduce new music. But it's things, the times, they are a-changing. You know there's Wi-Fi radios, Gary, that go in your car that look just like your current stereo? And if you were in Europe, folks, as some of our European listeners know, you can drive from Spain to Poland and never lose a Wi-Fi signal, and it's free. It's free. It's a public utility. It's free. So we'll get there eventually. By the way, we do broadcast over the Spotronic radio network. I want to say hello to everybody in the EU tuning in on their cell phones. That technology is also now appearing in the U.S. Well, Gary, let's move on to another cut. I have the next track queued up. Would you please introduce it?
This is called Crying Fire. This is an example of one that I was referring to before, where the sound of the words kind of drove the lyrical content, and you know, it could mean whatever you want it to mean. And this is Larry Hayden singing Crying Fire.
You're crying.
You're listening to the music of Gary Ault, our guest, A-L-T. Put a Gary in front of it in a .com, GaryAult.com, and you'll be over at the website. Music's available at CD Baby. And, of course, if it's on CD Baby, it's also available then on, I think, another 13 or 14 other sites like iTunes. Because CD Baby is so cool, they do it for you. Hey, did you know that?
Did I know that?
Yeah, did you know that?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of the benefits. I mean, you can get it through Amazon.com, and I didn't have to deal with them. You know, it's terrific. And the digital downloads, of course, are where the business is going. So that's, yeah, a great benefit.
Have you heard the latest trend? Some kids figured this out. They're putting their albums out on flash drives. Those little USB flash drives. You know, you just load up the songs. You got no duplication costs. You got no J card costs. You can put all the graphics and good-looking stuff on the thing you want. And when because what's the person going to do? They're going to load it to their iPod anyway, and they have a useful device. And then you can buy them on the net buy 100 for $150, you know, get them for $1. And you can't duplicate CDs like for that cheap, can you?
No. Well, actually, you can buy CDs pretty cheap nowadays, you know, but you can't beat it, though.
Yeah, and any suggestions we can pass along to help music from independent artists to get into the hands of the consumers? We're going to do that. When you write a song, you know, like you say, some of them are just because the words sound good. Some of them, you know, like Color Chain, have social commentary. But do you look at your songs all as in the same? I guess what I'm asking is, are there some songs that are more dear to the heart than others?
Oh, absolutely. You know, either because it's a personal, I suppose, mostly when it's very personal to me, but. There could be any number of reasons. It's just, you know, the music, like Lune Brisée, the first one you played, is an instrumental. It has no words anyway, but it's based on a dream that I a recurring dream I had as a kid. And it's, you know, it's very personal to me, and so I couldn't help but put my heart into the performance of that. So that's probably my favorite, actually, on the collection. So, yeah, I do have my favorites.
Well, what happens in your life when you write a song? You don't write a song every day or maybe even every week or every month, but... Obviously, you write songs, so what goes on in that process? Describe how that works.
Well, it's different every time, which probably sounds like a cliche, but, you know, there are times when I'm just driving in my car, and I usually have the radio on anyway, and just the sound will enter my head, and a handful of words. Sometimes I hear something wrong. You know, I hear something on the radio, and I misunderstood what I heard, and it gives me an idea for another lyric or something, and then you put a melody to it, and... The next thing you know, you're thinking, okay, I got to do something with this, and you know, then it goes from there. Other times, it's just a drum beat or a bass line. You know, it could be anything that's the spark for it, and then it's just a matter of sitting down to you know, write it.
We're going to try to get two more cuts in at the time we have left, folks. Coming up next is a cut called "Love Too Deeply." What are we about to hear?
This is my tribute to Robin Ford, who's a fantastic blues guitarist. And what I appreciate about him is not just his instrumental ability, but the fact that he's daring enough to sing. Because, you know, when you first hear him, you would never think, oh, he's an obvious blues singer. But he does have a pleasant voice that kind of grows on you. So I wanted to do something that I could play guitar, and also I'm going to go out there and I'm gonna you know, jump off the cliff and put my voice on it, you know, come what may. So that's what I did with this one. But this is the one when I had my friend Charlie Lean play the drums on it. And so, you know, I'm pretty proud of it. It's a, you know, good little blues tune.
Me go. When we first met, we you'll let me go.
The music of Gary Ault. You are listening to a featured music special on the Artist First Radio Network, Z-Man Studio 1A, and it's been my pleasure to spend this last hour with Gary. He certainly is an artist that deserves to be heard, and you guys can get out there and buy the CDs, cdbaby.com. You can get there through the website garyault.com. If you're listening to an archive, we always have the links, so all you got to do is click through. The links are provided right there next to the archive link. Well, Gary, we're down to our last segment. We're almost out of time. Any plugs or you want to scream at somebody in front of 10,000 people?
No, I don't like to scream at anybody.
Good man. Good man. Not that some people don't deserve some screaming every now and then. We never do that here, do we? No.
I'm too gentle for that.
But, we were talking off air. I hope you don't mind me revealing this to the listeners, but you have another album coming out.
Right. Yeah, actually, I've got two projects going on. One with Jason Arvanitis, who's the singer on most of these songs. We decided to get together, and you know, he writes and records as well. And it seemed like a natural to get together. And the process of doing that, I just always have a back catalog, and I realize I've got a lot of songs that I want to do something with. And so I've got, I don't know which is going to come out first, but I've got those two things going on. So.
Well, please come back. We'd love to have you back on the station. We appreciate you letting us play your music on our station. And anything we can do to further your career, by all means, let us know.
Well, thank you.
Any live gigs coming up we can send people over to get? You give away $100 bills, isn't that right, at every live gig?
Yeah, they're Monopoly. It's Monopoly money, but, you know, you can try passing that off. We've got a gig coming up next Friday, I guess it is, September 18th, at a place called Arthur St. Moritz in Sparta, New Jersey. It's a relatively small place, fits maybe a couple hundred people. My band is called Thunderhouse, and it's actually me and my son Derek on drums and Jason and Larry, who you already heard singing. So we do actually some of the songs from the CD in the set as well.
So you play some covers and some...
Yeah, mostly covers probably, but we do we do some of Jason's originals and some of mine and at least one or two that I wrote with Larry Hayden, the bass player. We try to mix it up.
Yeah, and it's cool, man, because when you go to that club and you say, "Yeah, we got an all original band," it's like, "Hello,
yeah,
hello," they're already gone. So you sneak them in there. That's what you do, and you bring the crowd in, let them have a few beers and let them spend some money, because that's what the club owner's there to do. He's there to sell booze and food and make money.
Right.
Well, this is a very difficult business, and we wish you the best of luck. Anything, again, Artist First can do to further your career, we'd be happy to in any way that we possibly can. We're down to our very last track, and I think it's cool that you did a song about this, but it's about the Dead Sea Scrolls, folks. They were found in an area near the Dead Sea called Qumran, right?
Right.
And tell them about this last cut.
Well, it's called Qumran, Come On, which again was just the sound that came into my head. It just sounded, kind of funny, Qumran, Come On. And I don't know, from there I just sort of, I'm not sure how it even happens, but I just sort of wrote a song, which ended up being very Steely Dan-ish, which again I can't even help because it's part of me. And as I wrote the lyrics, I realized, boy, this is kind of almost sounding like the Caves of Altamira, where it's telling a story about, you know, discovering something in a cave, you know, except that it's a different cave. So, yeah, it's you know, I had a lot of fun with it, and it's called, what is it called? Qumran, Come On.
Hey, you wrote the tune, man. You don't know the name.
Yeah, I forget, actually. Jason reminds me.
Well, you write so many songs, it's ridiculous. You're just a prolific songwriter, and we've enjoyed having you on. CD's called Tribute, everybody. The artist is Gary Ault. Here's the last cut.
Yeah.